tax credits for creating online gaming. What we're going to do is we're going to go over the tax credits that are available to online game companies as well as some game companies in this regard. There are many esoteric credits, the disability credit where you hire disabled people. We are not going to be handling those. We're going to handle, from the federal point of view, there were two credits that existed. One was the research and development credit, and one is the investment tax credit. The investment tax credit federally in regards to gaming companies stopped in 1996 when they redefined what investment tax credit was. Unfortunately, or fortunately from a gaming perspective, where the federal government destroyed the definition, the states actually adopted the old definition and actually grew it. There's also another component that we're going to talk about. One is the motion picture credit. I've contacted five states. I've described what online gaming is, and they have stated that even though online gamers or game companies don't consider them motion picture companies, due to the fact of everything involved in making an online game now, that they would have qualified if they had applied, or if you're thinking about starting one, can apply to get motion picture tax credits from the state. Now, why are credits important? Credits are important, first of all, as online gaming continues to grow and it becomes more and more complex, the cost factor starts getting quite high. Anything that can reduce cost is good. If I can go and say, I'm going to spend $1 million, I need somebody to give me $1 million to get to phase one. But if you give me $1 million, I can give you tax credits worth $200,000, which in his bracket equate to over $700,000 of real cash. He's sitting there and saying to himself as an investor, I gave him $1 million, he's giving me the tax credits, I'm out $300,000. This is not a bad risk. All of a sudden, from an extremely hard risk to swallow, now it's becoming a lot easier. Yes? Because it's a dollar for dollar against your tax. So therefore, if you have $700,000 worth of taxable income at the, I should have picked an easier number, at the 35% tax bracket, so on $700,000, that's approximately $225,000 of taxes you're going to pay on the $700,000. But I just gave you $200,000 worth of credit. So I've just sheltered that $700,000. I don't have to pay tax on it. I can earn it and then almost give it to you, but you're giving me back something that I don't have to pay tax on. It's like a wash.
Oh, I see. You're not saying that they're getting back $700,000. You're saying that $700,000
is not taxable to them. Okay. We're sheltering $700,000. And why I say $700,000 is because if I take the same amount of money that I'm using for what I am calling the research and development credit federally, and I then go to a state level, I get the state credits. And the state credits can be approximately 50% of the federal credits in certain states. Each state has their own credit. So there, all of a sudden, I'm giving him $300,000 worth of credit. So he could, and let's say I'm in, we're in Georgia, so let's say Georgia for this conversation, and Georgia does have these type of tax credits, I, as an investor, could possibly use, drop down an operation in Georgia, have them generate $700,000 to $900,000 of real income, which would be normally taxed, but because I've invested into this Georgia online game company, I now pay almost no tax. It's a way to go to somebody that's going to fund you and give you money. It's also a way to go to your family if you're just starting off small and say, I need $100,000, $200,000 of seed money. It's nice to be able to go to, you know, Uncle Harry and say, hi, you know, for the $100,000, I know you love me because I'm your nephew, but, you know, I'm going to give you some money back here. So you're not totally, you know, the $100,000 you give me, well, that's going to generate $35,000, which is almost the equivalent that Uncle Harry, when you earn $100,000 that year, you're not going to have to pay tax on it. So it's a offset. Now, by the way, everybody always talks about the gaming industry and the movie industry. This is a model that was used by the movie industry in the early 80s. When Disney started to go out and create Roger Rabbit was one of the better ones. They created these giant partnerships. People wanted to get in the movie industry. They put money into these partnerships. The partnerships generated these tremendous credits, well in excess, and I can tell you how to do that too, of what the individuals put in. And that was how they started to get cash to basically build their own movies. And then if the movies made money, great, and if the movies didn't make money, nobody cared. It was more of a tax incentive deal. So the first credit we're going to talk about is research and development. Now, research and development in any online game, the first thing you're going to do, you're going to do your design work, and you're going to come up and you're going to say, okay, what am I looking for? What, because some game, online game companies, can actually push out an online game from start to finish within 42 months. Most have a much longer time span. So you have to project where the industry is. You have to project what computers are being done there. That beginning part is your beginning research and development. And it does qualify. 100% of that money qualifies for a 20% tax credit. So if you're doing this all in-house and you're laying out $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, all that money could qualify for a 20% tax credit right off the top. And there are a couple of issues about it. Now, there's humor here. Now, there's humor here because this is the federal government. Now, and you have to deal with my perverse personality. I apologize for that. The government finally created final regulations on research and development, which loosened how you could qualify. And they got passed December 31st, 2003. And then they issued a tax memorandum, which is a request to the professional people out there, that they would like to take the new revised regulations and retroactively apply them to back years. Which means that if you didn't qualify under the old regs and the new regs retroactively go back, you could qualify for research and development credits retroactively. It does mean the accountant does make a little money. And I am an accountant, by the way, so I push my people. Not lawyers. We don't push legal work here. You would have to refile your returns and get your credits. But if the amount of money and the amount of credits could be quite substantial, it's something to look at. It's something to go home and take a look at. What can qualify for these in-house expenses? Employee wages for researchers, supervisors, or support services. Now, we're talking about gaming, online gaming. I think everybody kind of can see that we're in there. Supplies. Anything except real property, the land and the physical building. You go out, put a server, go lay an OC12 line. All these things qualify. Amounts paid, you'll love this one, to another person for the right to use computers for research. So I'm going to colo, and I'm going to colo in New York, and I'm going to be using somebody else's computers up there. Yeah, that one qualifies also. It's starting to get interesting. To be qualified, to have a, you know, to get even into the first parameters, there's three ways to get into this research and development. First is, everything that you spend has to be able, that if you didn't qualify, has to be able to be expensed. Well, pretty much everything that you spend in your beginning, middle, almost through beta. I think that I would logically say once you walk away out of beta, I would say at that moment is when all the expenses prior to getting out of beta. Now, I'm saying getting out of successful beta, not like beta that failed. Okay, we're going back to the working board. I'm saying beta just before we go and push the game out. That all qualifies. And all those expenses get capitalized. They're all expensable. You go out and buy computers. They're not real property. They're called personal property or tangible property. All those get expensed. And they're expensed through depreciation. And under this section, that's fine. That's okay. Your second, the research must be undertaken for the purpose of discovering information that is technological in nature and that is intended to be useful in the development of a new or improved business component of the taxpayer. Okay, I'm in online gaming. Okay, or I'm in computer gaming. Technology? Yeah, I think I fit that need. Am I doing it for a new component of my business? Well, the only component of my business is an online game. We're assuming you're a one component. I mean, if you're a Sony, you would have to set up a separate division, you know, or something like that. But let's just assume you're a one game company to start out with for this conversation. It's easy to drop a... anytime I use a terminology, you guys don't know what I'm talking about, just raise your hand and I'll explain it. I can drop a sub anywhere I want from my parent company and just say, okay, that's my research and development company, and that's my online game company. So if I have a secondary business where, let's say, I'm console, and now I'm going to do online gaming on the other side, I just drop the sub that way. And in fact, when you see large companies doing this and you say, geez, you know, why are they dropping all these little companies to create all these games? That's the reason. They're trying to keep each segment correct. As you get into larger companies, unfortunately, the cost allocations between the companies all fall apart. And third, finally, substantially all of the research activities must constitute elements of a process of experimentation relating to a new or improved function, performance, reliability, or quality. So pretty much, if we look at this from a general definition point of view, and this is the general definition, online gaming qualifies. Always did qualify, but qualifies. The thing that scared software companies is no amount is eligible for the credit if the research is conducted for a purpose related to style, taste, cosmetics, or seasonal design factors. Now, how that is raised in online gaming as why it's not being done, I am not sure. I never could understand it. I've talked to a batch of tax guys that are in the big companies. It just never made sense to me why they would like to quote that section. Because nothing in a new online game is cosmetic. I can see a pre-existing game where they're putting out a sequel. I can see that falling into place. But I can't see a new game ever qualifying for that as an exception to fall out of the credit. Now they say research must be undertaken for the purpose of discovering information that is technology in nature. Research is undertaken for the purpose of discovering information if it is intended to eliminate uncertainty concerning the development or improvement of a business component. So here I am. Everything I'm doing in an online game, through beta, I am uncertain that this game is a go. Everything I'm doing, I'm researching everything. When I go through beta and beta fails, why? Let's say 20,000 people get on and all of a sudden my server freezes. I always had the uncertainty. That's why I'm going through beta. That's why I put all this money in. So pretty much just the process of online gaming qualifies. Now, there is a famous case called Tax and the Accounting Software Corporation. Now, I being an accountant, tax accounting software is very good. They lost. And they lost because the information to be discovered must be new or previously unknown and must be information that is intended to be useful in the development of a new or improved business component. What they did was they had a tax software package, and it was pretty much terrible. It was a terrible package to begin with. From a technical accountant's point of view, it didn't work. So what they did was they did cosmetic internal designs, kind of made it more like more user-friendly. And they said all this was basically research and development. Well, I think it was a very far stretch. Even the new rules wouldn't have allowed them to get it. So they lost. Now we're going to take a step back. IP, intellectual property, is very important. Why? If you apply for a patent on a new process, there is, as you know, theoretically, one server, I think, holds about 60,000 players. I think that's the 40 or 60,000 players. That's the estimate. There's a company that said that, you know, and therefore, if you had 200,000 hitting, you're not on a server. You're on multiple servers at that time. There was a company that basically is promoting their game, saying that everybody that hits is going to be theoretically on the same server, a new technology being created. Could they have applied for a patent? Yes. Did they apply for a patent? I believe they did under a different company's name. If the patent is given to them, it's automatic, prima facie evidence that they did research and development and are entitled on all those expenses, that credit. 20% of all the expenses they spent on that game. Even if you don't get a patent, the government says, no big deal, we'll still give you the credit. Because some patents are difficult. Now, in this regard, geez. Yes, I'm sorry.
For that, would you need to actually have applied for the patent and not received it, or just that you did the R&D and you can support it, that it was new for your business component? I wasn't clear about that.
No, that's fine. The government pretty much has stated, if you apply for a patent and get the patent, it's a non-issue. You are entitled to the credit. If you never apply for the patent and you meet those three tests that I talked about, it's expense, it's technology, and that, you still can be entitled to the credit.
Okay, great. That's what I want to clear on.
No. No problem. Let's see. Now, there are expenses that fall apart here. First is, you're out of beta, you're online, you're getting your initial subscriptions, and of course, the dream of any online game is, you know, we're going to get 100% of it done, but if you get 75% of it done and you're out the door, I think you should be real happy. Beginning. But the moment you're out that door, the moment you're taking subscription money, it is my statement that at that moment, the next dollar spent on that game to get the other 25%, is no longer qualifies for research and development because you're out there in the commercial market. You're not researching, do I have something? You're basically saying, I am refining it. I am making it better. Now, my statement is, I like gray. I love gray. Gray is a great color, especially in taxes. But to me, that's a real black issue. You put that game out, that's it. It's done. You want it, you know, you push it, you're looking to disallow everything you've done. Because the government will go in and start disallowing, and they will just rip. Yes, sir?
Also on that date, when you start collecting money and you're actually out there, your patent had better be filed by that date or you won't be able to get it.
Well, actually, it's even worse than that. Because there are many people in the gaming industry that go and do lectures of games that haven't even gotten into beta, and they start discussing what they're doing. and you get the fan boards that say, you know, the promo, if you will, of what is going to make us new? What is going to make us great? Why are we different than EverQuest, you know, Dark Ages of Camelot, Diablo? By the way, I don't play any of those, but they're the first three that came to mind real quick, and I apologize to anyone else. As soon as you're out there and announcing it and making it public domain, you got 3 years to get that patent really filed. So what you have to do, if you're looking at this, you have to be very concerned and very cautious. You have to go and say, before I let my customer service people, my net people out to promo the game, let me take a look and see what I have to file to protect myself. Because what I would suggest to you that the day that you're taking subscriptions, you're already 3 years late. Because you've been on the net. You're telling everybody what you're going to do. Now, there is something very interesting about computer software, because the government actually came out and said any computer software research which is developed by or for the benefit of the taxpayer, primary for internal use by the taxpayer, other than for use in an activity which constitutes qualified research or production process, can also qualify for research and development. Now, why do I bring this up? Now, I am not a programmer, and I'm really not that great a computer player. I'm not a very good gamer, I have to admit this. But how many times has customer service and internal say, we need better internal software to do monitoring? We need monitoring in regard to who's accessing the game. How about all these great logs? Now, as you keep increasing, the games keep becoming more and more complex, it becomes very, very difficult to take the pre-existing software that already exists in the market and apply to online gaming as it is now for your product. So you end up having to redo it. All that software qualifies for research and development credit. Gentleman has a question.
That would cover things like internal trouble ticketing systems.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
Question was internal troubleshooting, ticketing issues, just in case, because they're recording this, and that's the only reason. I'm sure everyone heard in this mammothly packed room, overflowing. You should have been here. Might as well do my own height. That would also qualify. Now we're talking about internal software for a moment. Under the final regulation, software is innovative if it is intended to result in a reduction in cost, improvement in speed, or other improvement that is substantial and economically significant. Software development includes significant economic risk if the taxpayer commits substantial resources to development and there is substantial uncertainty because of technology risk that the resources would be recovered within a reasonable period. I don't care who writes the software. When they're writing this software and they're going to do trouble ticketing and things of that, I don't care. Nobody knows if it's going to work or not until they finally get it tested in the full market. Because when you're finally out there, or in beta, actually, well, that's what beta is supposed to be. And we're using beta here, and there are a lot of issues among people. What does beta mean anymore? We're going to use the old way of saying beta really means final test before I go to market. Final test to get the kinks out, see if all the internal systems are, if my gateway works, and if it doesn't work, I'm going back to the drawing board anyway. So those issues are the problem. Those issues have to be resolved. Those issues have tremendous uncertainty. Am I putting resources to solve this? Absolutely. I'm paying my programmers cash. That's a resource. Is it substantial? Yeah, it's substantial. I mean, I would consider, you know, someone to cover an area, and it may be asked, well, are my artists research and development? Well, the artists, basically, they're basically in the frame. No one knows if the art will really work based on the programming. Why? Because when I basically full load and download and I have all my servers at capacity, my artwork could all explode on me. I talked to the IRS about it. They felt, why not? They felt it could comply with the rules. They had no problem with it. There are a couple of cases in regards to internal software and the research and development credit. Now, as of to date, no game company, to my knowledge, has ever filed research and development credit. All the software cases are Norwest, which basically was an internal software program, the tax accounting program, and about three others, all totally outside the technology and game industry. There have been movie companies that have applied for this. I was told that Pixar came out and applied for this and actually was given a credit. And they're a movie company, obviously, but they also make Pixar games, and I think they took some of their gaming costs and threw it up top into it to qualify. Record keeping. A taxpayer claiming the credit must retain records in sufficient usable form and detail substantiate that the expenditures claimed are eligible for the credit. Well, there are some programmers in the game industry that really don't like to substantiate and give you code and give you the books. So maybe the suits can come down and kind of clobber them and say, hey, you know, we're going for the credit, so you really have to substantiate and write everything out. So therefore, the producer doesn't have to be the problem, or the executive producer, you know, oh, it's the suit is coming, you know. Get yourself together and start writing better code for us. It's a way. In reality, their code is not important. What it all has to be is, you know, in any production method, you know, you got the guys basically saying what they're working on. You have, don't throw out all the bad versions. You know, keep the bad versions. You're supposed to keep the bad versions anyway so that you can learn from your mistakes. That would be sufficient enough for the credit. So that's pretty much, other than going into the real gory details of how to calculate it, which, you know, really is a number crunching thing, which I don't really think we need to get into unless you guys really want me to. But that's a research and development credit. I would say to you that any game company, any online game company, can qualify. I would state to you that being able to go to an investor and saying that we believe we qualify for research and development, and that for whatever money that you come in, give to us, we're going to be able to kick you back out a 20% tax credit, is going to make them make you look a hell of a lot better than a lot of the other startups that are floating around there. It's also a nice, easier way to go and say, okay, I'm in a startup position, I want to go to my family, my friends, and here's a way to give them something back so that if it does bomb, because unfortunately online gaming does bomb, a lot of them, that, you know, maybe it's kind of equal. You know, you gave me an investment, but I saved you the same money in taxes. Thank you for helping me, but unfortunately. Now, oh, two. Jeez, you're supposed to wake up and tell me to do something.
So it sounds like the credit you're talking about applies not just to online gaming, but to any kind of gaming and perhaps even to any kind of software development that is a new product. Is that correct, or am I missing something?
No, you're totally correct. But I would state to you that I would, from an online gaming perspective, I would say almost 100% of the expenses for online gaming would qualify. I would say when you start talking new game or game console, just because the time frame of getting a new game out, the box is a lot shorter. Also, a lot of the game issues are, let's say you basically are going to license the Dune engine. Okay, now all of a sudden, since you're licensing the Dune engine, you're now, what are you doing? You know, you're pretty much kind of getting into an issue of, am I creating something new technology-wise, or because I'm taking my major engine, you know, the Dune engine. You know, am I just doing something of a design issue? All right. any company, yes, could qualify for research and development. Absolutely. And there's another credit we're going to talk about in a moment. Go ahead.
I was just wondering about if you were developing for a new console, like if you had an existing product that you wanted to develop for a new console or for a new technology, like, for example, a PC game and you wanted to make it a PDA game as well, would you qualify then for the research and development credit, even though it was an existing game?
I would state to you, because you're talking about, you know, taking doing portal transfers of that nature, it would depend on the components. First of all, there has to be a risk. So if you've never done one, if you've never taken your PC and moved over to a PDA-type game, I would say there's a risk inherent. And you would have to spend time on the research to make sure, A, that you actually are doing that. So there will be a major component that could qualify for research and development. But you would have to be much more particular, and you would have to tell everybody how to phrase what they're doing correctly to qualify. Okay, we're going to go to a theoretical credit. Now, what's a theoretical credit? Oh, yes.
One question.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sorry.
Actually, how retroactive is the research and development credit? I mean, let's say you put the game out 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What's the statute limitations?
3 years back.
3 years? Okay.
3 years from the day, from today. So you got 3 years back, which is interesting, is that they passed the new regs in 2003, which would mean that it would only be from 2003 on. And by the way, the research and development credit has expanded. It was supposed to be retired in June of 2004, and pretty much Congress has said, keep using it. You know, we're going to pass an extension for another 3 years. And it's actually in a bill that's being locked up right now. But yeah, 3 years back. My problem is that if they're going to retroactively go back, it'd be nice if they would say, go ahead and go back, so that we can take a look at all the things that we could have done and filed for within the period of time we're required to by law, which is 3 years. It's not going to help that in 2005 they're going to come back and say you can go from December of 2003, yeah, you can go retroactively back, because it's going to start from 2005, that return. So in other words, it's almost like they kind of giveth and they taketh away. They're saying, yeah, you can, but, you know, the statute's over, so you can't. So what you end up doing is it's an 843 claim, and 843 is the form 843. And that is basically, you just put down protective claim on it and saying, if you guys decide that I can retroactively go back, then I'm going to put the claim in. And I'm not going to let you bar me from putting the claim in because you guys wait 3 or 4 years to make a decision. And you guys is not Congress, it's the IRS. You know, Congress has passed what they wanted to pass. We have a new credit coming up. And we have to thank Microsoft for this credit. And I really mean this. And it's very rare that I will thank Microsoft for anything. There was something called the Foreign Source Credit, which is a credit that basically if your gross receipts were under $5 million, then pretty much any online game company or any game company startup immediately is under that level. And you have under $5 million in sales overseas, you could literally take, and it would equate to about 12.5%, and get a tax credit for it. 12.5% tax credit for $5 million or less for sales overseas. And I apologize, your domestic sales have to be under $50 million. So of the $50 million U.S. domestic, if you generated $5 million overseas, that $5 million would be taxed at your U.S. tax rate, but you get a 12.5% credit. So if you're at the 35% tax bracket, this credit would basically drop you down to 22.5% on the net income of that $5 million. And that was the small business provision cut out. Now, that was declared illegal by the World Court. The EU, the European Union, protested, said it was an unfair subsidy. And the new credit is a manufacturer's, a domestic manufacturer credit. And here we get into why I think it gets real fun. Manufacturing is now defined, and the law has pretty much, it's been sitting in Senator Thomas's bailiwick, and it looks like it will finally get passed. Manufacturing is defined of basically software. That if you basically create a disk and basically keep, you know, you have your golden and you keep shooting it out and putting it in the box and giving it to Electronic Boutique or whoever, that manufacturing is now a credit. And we have to thank Microsoft, because Microsoft basically, take a look what Microsoft does with Windows. I mean, all they do, they take their one, they keep stamping it out, you know, it's a great thing. That's a manufacturing credit. That manufacturing credit is supposed to be 15%. And I bring it to your attention that if your distribution chain includes a disk, which as of now, pretty much every online game has that in their distribution chain, that manufacturing of that disk, even if you have a third party manufacturing that disk, will qualify for the credit. If you are a game company, and I was watching the guys play the board games before I came here, you know, those cute little Warhammer creatures, the manufacturing of those creatures will qualify for that credit. To show you how explosive this credit is. And it is no longer tied into sales exports overseas. So before, you weren't entitled to the credit unless you actually did sell overseas. Online gaming would be you have somebody downloading in Canada, in the EU, in Asia. That would be the equivalent of foreign source income. Now, they've taken that away, and they're giving you, okay, every time you stamp and send it out, you get a credit. What that allows you to do is you're able to take expenses and costs to do that and to bump those expenses off, reallocate a lot of your administrative costs that are kind of like dead weight, allocate it to that aspect, purchasing, etc., and get a credit off of that. But that's a future credit, because they haven't outlawed the foreign sales corp credit yet. And they haven't passed this. So what does that mean? That means that if you're going to market, or you're at market, and you have Canadian subscribers and European subscribers, and you have only a U.S. server, let's say, at this time, then you would be entitled to this credit. And that's a given. Easy, fellow. So let's talk about the states. Investment tax credit used to be, and in the 80s and in the early 90s, that if you would go and buy tangible physical property, in our case computers, that a portion of the cost, if you are in manufacturing, as defined, and by the way, online gaming and gaming has always qualified for manufacturing, because you're creating a new component, so it always qualified. You would be entitled to a tax credit against your federal money. The federal government felt that that was no longer reasonable, and what they call investment tax credit now really is an energy credit, a rehab credit, rehabilitation to an historic property, an energy credit, hi, am I saving energy in some manner or shape, almost like the alternative energy credit. They're kind of synonymous. And there's a third credit, which I think is the disability component issue. And it really doesn't qualify for gaming per se anymore, that investment tax credit. But the states, and the states, when I say states, I talk about Georgia, Florida, every one of the 50 states. And, oh yes, we have territories, Puerto Rico, Washington, D.C., et cetera. All qualify, all have investment tax credits, where if you buy tangible property, they are more than happy to give you tax credits. If you buy or lease telephone lines and bring them into your area, you're entitled to tax credits. If you go into depressed areas, you're entitled to tax credits. And if you get even stranger, and I'll give you an example, the economic development committees in every state have what they call employment incentive. If you go to them and say, I'm going to start a game, or an online game company, and let us say that from soup to nuts, you could probably have an online game. I have to be careful because there's a company in New York that launched, and they did it with 10 employees. So, and their game is up and running, and actually they're starting to make money. But the average is between 50 to, you know, you project 50 to 70, and maybe, you know, if you talk to some people down in Austin, you know, you need 250 people, which I think is absurd, and I think they only say that so that people don't go and compete against them. I won't mention the companies. You can go and you can get tax credits, tax money, tax grants, which is real money that you don't lose control of, close to, I've had from $50,000 a person, new job, to the lowest I saw was $10,000. So if you go to these people and you can prove you're serious, you can show them the contracts, they will literally give you money to move into their state, to set it up, to help you buy things. And if you tell them, and this is a shock, well, we may make our online game company headquarters in your state also, which most online game company states, they're there. They'll give you extra money. They'll give you extra tax credits. If you call them up and say, hey, I'm an online game company, this is the motion capture equipment I have, this is the video work I'm going to do, this is all this, they should immediately tell you to do one thing. Have you contacted our motion picture film board yet? And why? Because pretty much based on the responses I got from Alabama and Arkansas, online gaming will qualify. Normal PC, well, I say PC, I'm a PC person, so please forgive me, will also qualify. Especially, you know, the videotapes, you know, the video clips that we put in now, you know, between the sequence, those will qualify and can also generate credit for you from the state. So, where do you go? I mean, I looked at the South, but we're kind of like all over the place. Every state I looked at gave money away to software technology companies, of which we are. Their biggest thing is probably between 50 to 90% don't apply. I contacted the economic development people. They never heard of a game company going to them. And this is, I didn't take every state, but I took, you know, I'm in Georgia, so I took Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, and yeah, I think that was it. Yeah. I tried Tennessee. They haven't responded back yet, so I'm not sure about that. So what's the easiest way to find out what credits are available in a state? Talking again to them. Oh, okay. Easiest way, corporate tax return. Everyone has their forms on the list. Type in tax credits for corporations. They will give you a list of all the tax credits and a brief explanation. I would do this before I, you know, if I'm out of my garage, I'd look at the state I'm in, obviously. If I'm looking around and I want to be geographically near home and I might be near the border, like I live in New Hampshire, but I'm like 7 minutes away from Massachusetts, 10 minutes away from Vermont. So to me, it's easy commute. I'm going to check all three of those states. Which one's going to give me the best deal? And believe it or not, you know, I'm a really firm New Hampshireite, but Vermont was well beyond what, I mean, you know, New Hampshire was going to give me $25,000 per person, and Vermont said, geez, if New Hampshire's going to do that, we'll give you $40,000. I sat there and said, I went back to New Hampshire and said, well, you know, Vermont's giving me 40, and you guys all only give me 25. And they said, well, we can't raise the 25, but you know, if we put you into this division, we think that we can get you an OC-12 line directly into your operation. And it would be for free. They would basically pay to lay it. And then, of course, the humor of it was then, after the gentleman said this, and, you know, I'm a New Hampshire, fellas, you know, this is a cute state. They turned around and said, what is an OC-12 line? And they said, is it like one step above a T-1? Because they all know about T-1s. Is it one step? I said, well, it's a little more than that. You don't want to freak them out. You know, you got to be nice to them. And I said, it's a little bit more than that. They said, well, you know, if we ran this, would it be possible that maybe you could give a little of its capability away to, you know, like, because you're near this town and this town and this town, and they're kind of rural. Do you think you could hook up the town halls to this for free? I kind of said, well, do I have to really do it for free? Whereupon they said, well, we could, how about if you just charge them cost? I said, I could do cost. And I was very magnanimous about it, I thought. I wasn't trying to make a profit, you know. So that was a very interesting step in the negotiations. And unfortunately, I got somewhat sick, and I had to stop the negotiations and everything. But they still call me and say, you know, in fact, they called me up and said, you know, we have this new 40,000 clean space. They were making medical provision technology, so it's totally clean. And we can rent it to you, you know, if once you get back on your feet and you want to start this again and do this. I said, great. What's my rental? And they said, well, because it has all its utilities already there because of what it was, you paid the utilities. I thought that was fair. I'll pay for my utility. And they'll rent it to me for $2 a square foot. But I said, but you got to run the OC-12 line to this location. You know that. And they said, oh, yeah, don't worry about that. That's easy. Yeah. No problem. I said, oh, well, you know, if I get back on my feet and I'm going to take a look at this, I'll work on it. But my statement to you is, look at the forms. The tax credits are there. The state is more than happy. If you have a question, the state will be actually more than happy to get you into their state. They will help you qualify for credits. If they do not tell you to go to the economic development group, do it yourself. They are more than happy to cut a deal. The town that I was going to be located in pretty much said, well, you know, you're leasing this space for $2 a square foot. How would you like to buy the space, because the town happens to own the space? And I said, well, what would you charge me? What would it cost me to buy this space? I mean, this is real hard money. I mean, I was only looking at $80,000, you know, for 40,000 square feet of clean air-conditioned space. They said, well, you know, if you heat it, I'm in New Hampshire, it's cold. If you heat it, and because it's attached to another building, so that your heat will kind of go through the walls and heat this other space, we would be willing to sell this entire space to you for $100. And we would be willing to basically not charge you real estate taxes for 5 years on the space. Whereupon I went to the MEDC and I said, you know, I'm bringing these jobs and you're giving me this money as a grant, but now I might buy the space. They said, oh, we have another program for you. We can qualify. We can give you maybe $1 million. Now, when I say give, I talk about grants. I talk about grants for major E, grants tied to employment. The reason is I don't want them touching any of my technology. I don't want any requirements on my body whatsoever. But if I get these credits and I say I have to produce 40 jobs, and by the way, the jobs don't have to be generated from the state. So let's say I pulled all 40 jobs out of Texas. That would qualify because I'm creating 40 jobs and there's 40 jobs in that state. It doesn't have to be for state residents. I just have to create 40 jobs. But that's the type of grants I'm talking about. I'm not talking about loans that theoretically can impair anything I do. Yes, sir?
Now, you're saying that's for New Hampshire. Are you sure that's for every state? Is that true for every state?
Well, first of all, New Hampshire is not unique. But it's also Florida, California, Washington State, Connecticut, Vermont, Massachusetts. These were the ones I checked out. Maryland was Maryland is really absurd. I felt like they were going to give me the state house, Capitol House. You know, they basically said that they would set me up. Maryland would set me up in a technology place, give me the jobs, make sure that I had a high speed OC12 line, and by the way, introduce me to every university in that area, the technology belt, so that they could, that every university would know that in 2 years I need this. And they would make sure that they have a program in place that in 2 years they could pass me these employees. Which, by the way, college grads are a lot cheaper than experienced people. No offense meant to experienced people. All that means is I better have experienced people to supervise. But from a business point of view...
A quick comment on that is Maryland and Virginia and D.C. are in a bidding war for technology right now. And so Maryland, that area is going to be attractive. But going back to the job creation, you're not necessarily required to hire people from that state, but is it true that the work has to be performed in that state so that it's economic development within the state that's giving you the grant money? Or could your workers be located in Texas even though the money's coming from New Hampshire?
In that regard, no, because then I wouldn't have that problem, because what I'd be doing is I'd have using Texas and New Hampshire as an example only. I would have my central headquarters. I would probably have management up there, and whichever best deal I could. Then I go down to Texas and say, "Hi, I'm a company. I have a subsidiary in your state. What are you going to do for me down here?" But I can't count people in Texas to equal my grant that's coming out of New Hampshire. But then again, the standard of living in New Hampshire is a hell of a lot cheaper than Texas. Of course, we do have winter.
What was it you were saying in your initial presentation to these states that would, I guess, make them want to entrust $1 million or these assets and funds with you in a grant? I guess.
They want jobs. They want jobs. They're desperate for jobs. They want jobs in their state. And if you go in and you have a reputation with the state, okay, they are more than happy to entrust this type of money, because it's grant money. They're saying to you, here's $1 million, and we're going to buy every one of your computers.
But they have
your computers until you get those bodies. They have your computers as their collateral. But who cares? Computers, 3 years of garbage.
Why would they, or what?
What's their incentive?
What's their incentive to give that money to a startup company as opposed to giving it to an established company for purposes of expansion?
Both companies will qualify.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
A startup company is easier only because you're going in and you're saying, here I am. They're not going to give you 100%, obviously. They're not going to fund you 100%. Here I am. Here's my money for working capital. Here's what I'm doing. I need all this, you know, collateralized stuff that you guys can give me. You know, give it to me. And, you know, a perfect example is, I would say, and in online gaming, we're talking online gaming here, that if you start at five employees at best, actually you'll start at maybe three at best, then you'll go to four, then you go to five. Potentially, you could be up to, as you keep going, and if you have the money, if you go to them and say, look, here's how my business plan is, here's how my money is, you get up to 70 employees. They're looking at 70 employees potentially in their state. And by the way, just so that we can clarify one other thing, besides employment creation grants, there's a new type of grant out there in the states, because every state, as the gentleman pointed out, is bidding for jobs. It's called employment retention. Not creation, but retention. so that if you somehow, God forbid, do not make the number you're supposed to make, they actually have the capability, these great state departments, to say, well, you know, the grant that we gave you that was supposed to create jobs, well, you created 20, but you were supposed to create 40, but we're going to revise the grant that now we're going to say the grant is for you to basically retain the 20. Don't take away the 20. So we'll give us 2-3 more years of at the 20, and we'll blow the grant out. Okay. Anyone else?
Oh, what I wanted to ask was, what exactly are the parameters? I mean, can you just go in and say, I'm a startup, give me money? I mean, do you have to have a business? Is it a business plan? Do you have to have a certain amount of money? Do you have to show you're going to have a certain amount of employees? I mean, what are the real specific things you have to show?
You need a business plan. Okay. You will file an application. They will grade you based on the application, based on small business, based on all these needs. If you are going to them and saying, hi, I have no money, it's going to say, we're not in the business, you know, we're not a 100% financing type entity. We're not going to do that. But if you show that you have money and you show that, hi, I can buy hardware equipment, hi, I can buy computers, I can buy a building, they will find a way. They will not give you money for working. I will state this. I'll take that back. They will tell you that they will not give you money for working capital. They will tell you that. Yet I have had states, based on other clients, that have basically gone in and gotten money well in excess of what they really wanted, and basically all of a sudden found out that they got working capital money at the same time.
So that was sort of a side effect.
But the state says that they don't give working capital money. But I'm sorry, I buy a $5,000 computer, to me, it's $5,000. How the state was able to make that $20,000 to justify giving them 80% of that instead of 80% of the five, you know, it's a state. It's a government agency. You know, I can't do everything for them. Yes? Anyone else? Well, it's close enough, don't you think? I can pontificate a little more. Let's see, we got... Hey.
Wake up. You've got at least another half hour.
Oh, I got a half hour, so I can talk. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah.
I thought this was an hour. I'm sorry.
An hour and a half.
So let's talk about other ways to get money. Other ways to get money. There are companies out in the marketplace. Let us say if you're building a $15 million game, or whatever game you're building, you're spending about a third of it on artwork, I would say. Rule of thumb, I say a third. How many people have been involved in a game or are involved in a game that have taken that artwork and have licensed it to generate income? Why not? Don't you think it would be nice to get a little cash flow before your subscriptions? While you're in the process?
I think BioWare does that, actually.
No, BioWare doesn't. No? Right. They've hired a lot of people to do third-party artwork, but they don't take the artwork and then relicense it to put it on product. How many people are in a game or have played games or have become addicted to online gaming, and then you go to the store, because sooner or later stores do get attached, and how much is licensed there that you would like to buy? When you're building a game, how many people think, okay, who's putting the online store so that while my users are going through and they're playing or they're basically in the chat room, how about if I had a store available to them that I could tag on, open it up, and generate income? How many people that started EverQuest would have wanted to buy an EverQuest t-shirt? Think about how many users you have, even on the changeover. you become addicted to a game. These guys are plunking down money a month. For them, $10, $15, $20 for a qualified T-shirt, a qualified mug or something of that nature, they're there. How much money could you generate? How much money could you generate even before you launch? For people that get so excited, I'm going to be there. I'm signing up for beta. I'm going to love it. I just want to be walking around with that T-shirt that's basically saying, I'm this. It's money. It's money to offset, especially when you're in what I call the research and development stage. These are secondary and third style income flow that every game company, every online game company, every new company that has a captive asset, artwork, should be looking at now. And finding the companies that will license and give them a fair shake. T-shirts, you got the... I admit it, I'm prejudiced, I'm in New Hampshire, so you'll have to forgive me. You got the Mountain Corporation. They are probably, if you ever walk around downstairs, you'll see Mountain T-shirts. So they're the ones with the dragons and the wizards in the with the tie-dyed aspect to it. They're known because they have a leather label at the back. These guys, the reason why I like them, first of all, they're my client, so they pay me. So I like them really a lot. But if they take your artwork, they actually pay license fees for it. They are one of the few T-shirt companies in the United States, if not the world, that will sign a licensing agreement, will give credit on the T-shirt. So if it was, using an example, Wish is headed for beta, right? So basically, if there was some artwork of Wish, they would say, you know, credited Wish on the T-shirt, and the T-shirt would be out with whatever creature was acceptable and possibly modified, because, you know, you have a screen of what you're going to do on the video, but it's got to go on a T-shirt, so sometimes they stretch it. Sometimes the colors on the monitors just don't look right, so you agree to color swap, but it doesn't matter. Because all of a sudden, now you have something that's hitting. You know, we want to talk about free advertising. You're generating income because you're getting paid on the royalties. Once a month, you get paid royalties. And you're getting free advertising. How are you getting free advertising? The Mountain Corporation approximately has over 12,000 retail outlets. So this T-shirt potentially could be in all 12,000 saying, you know, credited by Wish. It's the excitement of the game. What are you trying to do when just before you go out? You're trying to get the game to be excited. You want people to be excited. Advertising. Well, a lot of internet, but hey, be nice to be able to go and say, hey, by the way, do you know we're offering you T-shirts now that you can basically go and take a look at our creatures? I call them creatures. Some people call them other things. That's one way to do it. You get free advertising. There's another company now that I know does fantasy cards, greeting cards. It'd be nice to go and get that company and get a licensing agreement with them. Yes, it's also another client of mine, and yes, I get paid by them too. But they're actually the only two that I know that license fantasy artwork. I've seen a lot of companies that basically do fantasy artwork, but don't pay for the artwork itself. And those are the companies that I would avoid. If you can find in your local area a company that will license to you, definitely take it. Licensing is between 5 to 10% of what the other company sells. But it also is that you got to take a look for things that will generate money outside the subscription, because I'm assuming we're all going to be on subscription, on an online gaming process, on a subscription module. And that would be put an online store right next door to them so that your people, your users, your fans have a way to support you in another way. A third possible way of income, and we're talking about tertiary, is basically, and I disagree with this, I've had some online companies tell me that, hey, you know, we were so hard up in cash, we kept the U.S. domestic, we just sold Europe. I don't feel comfortable with that. First of all, I think you're giving away a lot too much. I could understand, but I think there are other ways to generate the cash. If you were doing credits, I think you could have gotten the same money and just sold your credits the same way. I think that selling worldwide rights to your online game is something that was done by motion picture companies. They're now relatively out of that business. And you got to take a look. If they tried it and they didn't like it, then why are we walking down that path? Because anything that didn't work for them, why is it going to work for us? They found out it was a problem. They walked away. Any questions on secondary or third party income? No, yes?
Not really.
Okay.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I got this. Can I promote my next lecture?
Yes. You've got 20 minutes.
I got 20 minutes to promote the next lecture. We're not going to promote it that long. I wouldn't do that to you. But please come to the next lecture. Whereas I said, this is like Kill Bill 1 and Kill Bill 2. We just did Kill Bill 1, which is where the states basically give it. And what we're going to be talking about at the next lecture is how the states are going to take it away. And what they're going to take away makes what they give look very, very paltry. And the issues behind that lecture is that there is a change coming. And you guys are in technology. You guys know change. You guys live change. You guys cannot be scared of change. I am in an industry that had a cornerstone. The cornerstone was who has the right to tax the company. And it always was the person where the physical presence, the physical establishment was. That was the area, that was the state, that was the locale that could tax that area, that company. Congress, at the bequest of the states, are going to change that. Now, whereas you guys are used to technology change, my industry has been basing something since the 1400s based on that cornerstone, which now Europe has destroyed. Europe destroyed it 2 years ago. And now it's going to be destroyed in the United States. And it will be destroyed, no matter how much we fight and how much I write protest letters. And the issue I bring to you is, and it was an interesting conversation I had last year, it is going to create a tremendous violation of confidentiality, which from online gaming is a major issue, because how much information, when you take the credit card, when you get their name, you have a lot of confidential information right there, which you can't give out to a third party. You are going to be required to give it to a third unknown party. So you're basically potentially have the issue of violation of constitutional rights. You have the states basically going to be able to tax you in any other, talk about online gaming. Here I am, I'm here in Georgia, my server's in New York, and my client is, let's say, domestic U.S. Every state that has a sales tax, you will pay sales tax on, or use tax on. Has anybody noticed that if you hook up to a server that's located in Europe on an online game, you get to pay VAT tax, There's now a little additional charge on it. That's because the EU basically destroyed that. They destroyed the cornerstone. And we will be getting into digitally downloading and server problems. Because one of the components of online gaming is 100% of the data is not on that server. Why? Because if you had 100% of the data on the server, where we say 60,000 per server, you go down to maybe 30. You also slow down the process of getting your customer on the server to play the game, because you want them on and you want them addicted to the game. So you kind of you start getting into a quandary here. Because believe it or not, sales always runs a company. Perfect example, Earth and Beyond. I think they had, 50,000 users, I think, before they pulled the plug? They had about 50,000 users, monthly users, and they decided to pull the plug. 50,000, let's say $10 a user, because probably I think actually it was 15, but they had a lot of screw up. So let's say 50,000, $10 a user, $500,000 a year, $6 million in sales, and they found it unprofitable. If you added sales tax and the compliance cost, it gets worse. The CFOs did a review of the compliance costs. The compliance costs to meet the needs are in excess of $1 million. And they're not sure if it's going to be, it's $1 million for all the software in the startup. They are not sure what it will be subsequent to this. So if you would like to hear about this, where we basically become the doom and gloom show, please come to the next lecture, which is 11:30 tomorrow. Ooh, an early one. I think that's about it. I think, any questions? Well, I'd like to thank the packed crowd that is here. Woo!